That was beautiful. Just wow. We saw you on both sides of that cold, didn't we? We saw you coming in and now we see you coming out. You're feeling better though. Look at you. Yeah, welcome. Good morning. So Celia, I just got to tell you this one thing. Jenny already knows this. But when I was a little girl, I used to go to the bowling alley with my mom and dad, and I would hang out in the ladies' restroom, and I would lock myself in a stall and sit up on the back of one of those toilets and sing like that. And I'm not kidding you, I was as good as that. I'm sure of it. It worked really well. I at first thought that I would just sing in the bathroom, but then I would notice I got embarrassed when women came in to use the facility. So I learned that the acoustics of that metal stall, and then it was like this great throne. You're elevated, and nobody could see you. And I would sing my heart out all the time, and thought I was going to be an opera. Flush for rhythm. Oh, my goodness, my goodness, my goodness. Good morning. Good morning. Indeed, I welcome you to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm so happy that you are here to join me, and I have a funky little talk. Reverend Cheryl, you're just going to laugh when you see what I'm about to do. All right. So I had this idea. We were moving into Christmas, and you know, I always do my talk titles way ahead, and I just thought, angels and saints. We should talk on one Sunday. I have never done this before. I even declared once that it would never be a talk that would be given from a science of mind pulpit, and yet something sort of challenged me to see if I could pull it off. And so we're going to talk about angels and saints today, and I wanted to do that because I think that both of those ideas are really pretty gorgeous themes for the Christmas season. Now, last week we did our kickoff into Christmas, and we just mentioned briefly that there's a lot of symbolism in this idea of Christmas, and the major piece that we don't want to miss is that a baby was born, an innocent child born in this humble surroundings that brought hope to all of humanity. And that's the part of the story that we don't want to miss. We want to really concentrate, and in Science of Mind especially, we talk about the Christ consciousness that was born on the planet at that time. So we have, that is our elevated spiritual way of looking at the sort of the spiritual matters connected to this particular holiday. So it's a birth of a new idea. And in New Thought, we have a very different way in which we look at angels, our view of angels, and how we understand the roles of saints. So since the beginning of time, since people have been able to communicate and discuss such ponderings, people have sort of relished the idea that there is there are ways for us to feel sort of guided and protected and directed in our human experience of living. And that's what I want to talk about and address this morning. So angels and saints are, well, angels are more than tree toppers. You know, I realize that, and that there are some origins to some of these ideas, and that's what I want to look at this morning. The actual term angel has a Greek origin, and it was originally angelos, and it means messenger. Sometimes we translate it to mean messenger of God. And it looks like a lot of spiritual traditions, and this is what I'm going to point out today, have some connection to that meaning of the word. I wanted to give you a quotation that was a good sort of summary of how we collectively look at this idea of what angels are. And I found this beautiful quote from a woman named Bernadette Dimitrov. And Bernadette Dimitrov is an author and an inspirational speaker from Australia. And she is also the founder of an organization, her organization, called the Santa Claus Peace School. And what they emphasize in her school is just peace and happiness. And she does it on that premise of the joy of this image of someone named, that people have named Santa Claus. But listen to her explanation of what angels are. She says, angels are depicted as being immortal, human-like in appearance. They are transparent and they have wings. They live in the heavens and they come to us as intermediaries of a higher power. They are our link to the mystical heavens. Now, personally, I'm thinking right now that Celia is our link to the mystical heavens, at least today or whenever she's singing. I would have to say that that totally fits you. And in that way, we can also see that sometimes there are people in our life who we see are representative of that idea of angels or what an angel is. Now, metaphysically looking, you got to always dive into the Fillmore Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, and that comes from the Unity teachings. The deeper meaning, the metaphysical meaning of angels is literally thoughts of the Lord. And Fillmore goes on to say, our angels are our spiritual perceptive faculties. So what he's saying is that there is a way in which our thoughts, when aligned to spiritual wisdom, are that angelic sort of elevated, risen way of understanding our physical experience on the planet in these bodies. Now, in fine art, if you go to a great museum, you'll see that there are lots of pictures depicted in the artwork in fine art. And the angels vary in how they look. They're all beautiful and wonderful, from the very little baby cherubs with the fat cheeks, you know, that kind of little angel, to the really exotic, I would say goddess-like, like us, right? Except I'm not tall. But, you know, the flowing and the, that must be why I dress this way today. The flowing movement, the great beauty, the something gentle, majestic, sacred, something that touches us. So angels in fine art are depicted with great beauty. However, if we look at the biblical understanding of or depiction of angels, angels aren't all that cherub-like or beautiful. In fact, angels in the Bible, and did you know there are 273 references in the Bible of angels, mostly in the Old Testament, but certainly in the New Testament. We know that the gospel account, even much of the Christmas season, reported in the book of Luke, also has that angel representation. But in the Bible, the angels can be powerful. They can even be fierce and fiery. They can fight, they can do battle for you, or they can fight with you, or they can help you, or they can test you. And that's some of the ways in which angels are depicted biblically. So it doesn't quite align to the worldview that we see through the gorgeous work of fine art. But what I notice about us, and I don't just mean us, I mean people in general, is that we have a high desire to believe in the presence of angels in our lives. And we aren't so much interested in the metaphysical interpretation as much as we are desiring to believe that there's some kind of divine intermediary or intercession on the part of some holiness in the planet that for many people looks like some form of an angel in whatever way we conjure that in our own mind. So before I go any further, I have the disclaimer for the morning. And that is, please don't change whatever that means to you. However you experience angels in your own life, if you do, this is not information that should change you in any way. It's kind of like when I'm teaching the foundation class. I often will start, especially when I get ready to teach prayer, to teach spiritual mind treatment or affirmative prayer, I like to preface that by saying, don't quit praying in the way that you pray. pray, we all need to pray, we all desire, we want to pray, it makes the world a better place. So pray in a way that's comfortable for you, and while you're learning some of the new methods and some of the different affirmative approaches, you can begin to incorporate those. And if it resonates for you as a powerful way to prayer, then my dream is that you will embody the steps to treatment and be able to pray in a really powerful way without begging something outside of you, and rather claiming or embodying the aspirations, the divine aspirations that we are born with and that we desire to experience in our livingness. So notice that a topic such as this is one that invites us to stretch our consciousness to a greater understanding and ways we can use these symbols or these ideas that will make our lives more meaningful and purposeful. So Ernest Holmes does not have a lot to say. Kind of surprised me you found something. Ernest Holmes doesn't have a lot to say about his opinion of angels. And so what I want to point out is that doesn't mean he didn't believe in them. He kept his personal stuff to himself, and he wrote and promoted for us to understand in a more universal way the principles around the natural spiritual laws of the universe so that we can be empowered in our livingness. So he kept his personal opinions on things like this that are not scientific, that are not provable. He kept those things to himself and had private conversations with the people that were closest to him. But here's what Ernest Holmes did say one time when he was asked about what we believe. And I believe he said this in the 1920s. I didn't actually look that up. Maybe my friend Noli will know this and give me a nod one way or another. You're too far back there, Cheryl. I can't see you. But you can shout out if you know. Ernest Holmes said, "Science of mind is a correlation of the opinions of philosophy, the revelations of religion, and the laws of science, that when we throw that all together, philosophy, the revelations of religion, and the work of science, the laws of science, then apply that to our personal needs and aspirations, then we have something." He said, if we take that together and we apply it to the needs and aspirations of people today, now we have a methodology, a practical application of spiritual truth. So notice this has nothing to do with those things that we believe, but it has a strong emphasis on the fact that there is a presence and a power, and that's what we can talk about, and that's what we can turn to and use in our lives. So it's always about, from Holmes' perspective, it's always about ways we can practice being co-creators in our own life. If you want to change the circumstances of your life, we get together with that divine wisdom, we change our thinking, we change our life, or we are transformed as we renew our minds, as we renew our thinking and our thoughts. So we're always looking to increase that wisdom and our personal meaning and purpose. So by all means, don't give up any of your traditions. You know, if you find that Christmas isn't complete till you put the angel on top of the tree, I notice we have a star. I like stars too. Then that's what you want to do. If you have cultural traditions, if you have family traditions, it's wonderful to honor those if they are meaningful to you, while we remain open at the top and look to always grow. You know, every Christmas season, I look to understand that, to embody it, to really embrace that understanding of a newborn infant that came to bring us hope, the Christ consciousness that is constantly expanding as we work it, acknowledge it, open ourselves to receive the grace of God, whether that's an angelic gift or it's something we learned from a saint that we are fond of, it doesn't matter, but that we stay open and we keep growing. And I'll tell you my rule, my bottom line rule. If you've been in a class with me, you've probably heard me say it. I look at what I believe and some of the beliefs I continue to hold in my life that I had before I studied any of this philosophy, and I ask myself, is this a love-based belief or is there some fear in it? So whenever I catch myself leaning more to the superstitious side of life, I'm afraid of a consequence, so I have some, you know, our little silly thing. My husband can't spill salt without throwing it over his shoulder. It always embarrasses me at a restaurant because he douses the person behind him, but so far it hasn't turned out poorly. So that's my gauge. That's how I measure where I'm at. Is this a fear-based belief, or is there love in this and it doesn't hurt anybody and it keeps me open to growth? Then I'm all about that. But I do remember always who my source is. And angels, as I'm going to point out in a minute, angels and saints were not ever intended for us to replace them in terms of our worship to that one mind, to that absolute, to God, whatever you call it. So there's that. Yes, angels are mentioned 273 times in the Bible, and only three times were they given names. Can anybody name the three names of the angels in the Bible? Gabriel, the Christmas angel. Yes, Gabriel is the one that came and said to Mary, "You are with child." And she went, well, we can only imagine what she did. how would one respond to that? Who is another one? We got Gabriel. Michael. Did you say Hugh? He's my angel. It's not biblical. He is so not biblical. Michael is the second one. And the third one is? Lucifer. Can you imagine? Three named Lucifer, the guy gone bad, the good angel who made some other decisions. So those are the only three named in the Bible. Generally speaking, we can say that angels are, from most faiths, are depicted as pure spirits or spirit beings. We see them to have a heavenly residence, and they are employed by God. Whatever God wills, they respond. So we could see that it's sort of an angelic secret service. Now, sometimes angels are called by the names of saints. So sometimes, depending on what faith you have a background in or know about, there is, for instance, sometimes we say Saint Michael the Archangel, right? So sometimes they double duty like that. And saints are different than angels because saints were all humans first. They were human beings that had human experiences, and they were good or kind or generous or whatever. They did great things, and so when they die, it's sometimes deemed that they become saints. And then what some people believe is that, so this is not a science of mind belief, I'm just giving you the general sort of Christian view, that it's believed that when they die, then they go to heaven and they continue their saintly work. Now, that is the common belief that comes from Catholicism and Orthodox Christianity. But everybody else, all the Protestants, have a different view. And the way the view is different, there are several primary differences between Catholicism and Orthodox Christianity and being Protestant. And the primary difference has to do with that idea of needing that intermediary person to intercede between the human being and God. And so the Protestants sort of woke up and protested and decided they didn't need to believe in a middle person, that they didn't need the priest to forgive their sins, that they didn't need anybody to intercede. But the Protestants also do acknowledge that great Christians of history existed, great human beings, and sometimes they even refer to them as saints as well. So Protestants believe that every human being, we sort of stand on this side, every human being has equal opportunity to communicate directly with God. And that was really important to Ernest Holmes. And that stands in our declaration of, what do we call it? Beliefs? What we believe statements, our declaration of beliefs. There's actually a very powerful stand there for believing in that immediacy of the presence of God, and that we all can have that intimate communion. I like to call it communion. And that really is where the mystical side of this faith sees oneness, and it's how we teach oneness. So, the most important saint around this time of year, who's the most important saint this time of year?
Nicholas.
Saint Nicholas, yes, thank you very much. Did you used to be Catholic? No, Saint Nick, jolly old Saint Nick. Yeah, that's the obvious one. And so there's a wonderful story of Saint Nick, and sometimes we call him Father Christmas. It is, he was an actual person that lived in the 4th century, and he actually lived in Asia Minor, which is now Turkey. And his story says that he was born to wealthy parents, but his parents died when he was a young child, and they left him a lot of money, so he had this cushy life, and he was a really good person, and he was kind, and he became generous because he had so much money. And so he liked to sneak around and give gifts anonymously and not let anybody know that he was the gift giver. And the story of how he was an actual man, but now a lot of the stories are legends. They're not provable, but they're great stories about how things originated in the Christmas traditions. And the story of why we hang stockings over the fireplace comes from Saint Nick. So Nicholas, as a grown man, now kind and generous and doing gifts, knew of a family in his village who was very, very poor. It was a father who had lost his wife. The father had 3 daughters who were of age to marry, but they were so poor that there was no dowry. And at that time, in that culture, there was no marriage if there was no dowry. So Nicholas knew of this predicament. And one night, he climbed the roof of the house, and he dropped a small bag of gold down the chimney. Now, the girls would hang their stockings up on the mantle at night to get them close to the fire so that they would dry out. And it just so happened that that bag of gold fell into one of the stockings. So the next day they find this gold. They're so happy. It's enough money for one of the daughters to get married. It's enough for a dowry. So time passes. The daughter gets married. And Nicholas now comes back and he drops another bag of gold down the chimney so that the second daughter can get married. So all is well. The daughters are so happy. And now the father gets suspicious, and he starts thinking, well, I got one more daughter. I bet there's another bag of gold that's going to come. So he starts camping out, looking to see who it is that's bringing this great gift to help the daughters have a dowry so they can begin their own lives. And what happens is he finds Nicholas. He catches Nicholas in the act. Now, Nicholas is not so happy that he's been busted. And so he begs the man not to tell anybody what he does, but as time goes on, word gets around town, and from then on, whenever anybody got a secret gift, they believed it came from Nicholas. So because of his kindness and his generosity, he became a saint. He's also the saint, he actually is the saint of many things, but the next most important thing was for sailors, that he had that same power Jesus did to calm the seas and help people get safely to shore. So I wanted to spend a little time this morning giving you the view of angels from a few different world religions. And the interesting thing is I did this research, it was kind of fun because what I found out was that angels show up in almost every religion and every culture throughout the ages. And not only that, but there are more people, this is stunning for me as a minister, there are more people that believe in angels than believe in God or any kind of higher power. Isn't that interesting? And that even there are agnostics and even atheists who admit that they believe in spiritual guides or guardian spirits of one sort or another. So the majority of us absolutely not only believe in the presence of angels, but we really like that idea of the intervention of angels in our human life. So if we start with the first people, you know, if we look at the indigenous tribes, the nation's first peoples, we can see that they had many traditions, that they believed in those powers in everything. Think of how in Native American tradition there are even animal totems, you know, power totems. So there's always been that sort of way we reach out and look to empower ourselves by putting power into icons or images or whatever that happens to be. But if we look at if we look at what we call the world's oldest living faith or religion, that would be Hinduism. And Hinduism was the first faith to have scriptures. In fact, the Vedas are more than 6,000 years old. And so in Hinduism, we see that they have this complex understanding of major gods and minor gods. That's not the way they word it, but I'm going to say that to help us understand it. And the minor gods are devas. They call them divas, and diva literally means shining ones. Well, you would have to say, if you look at Celia, she is a shining one. I mean, I know you use diva in a negative way, but, you know, the goddessness of it. So what the Hindu faith believes is that the divas inhabit the astral plane, and they are the protectors of humans, and they bring messages to people, and they help guide people in their spiritual growth. Now, from Hinduism and from that region, which is vast, comes Buddhism. And so a lot of the traditions in Buddhism are the same as the traditions in Hinduism. And in Buddhism, their angels are called Dharmapalas or Dharma protectors. And in Tibetan Buddhism, they believe the divas, are emanations of the bodhisattvas. And you know what the bodhisattvas are. Kuan Yin was a bodhisattva. The Kuan Yins are the enlightened ones. And so they put a lot of emphasis on all of that. I know in Thailand, where the form of Buddhism that is practiced in Thailand is Theravadin. In Thailand, they have a belief that the divas love it when people are sitting around meditating, right? They love, it makes them happy. They say, their tradition says it makes them happy to see people meditating. However, the divas will harass people with bad behavior. We should know that before we travel to countries like that and misbehave. But if we look back even to ancient Greece and we look at what the classical philosophers believe, Aristotle had an interesting perspective. Aristotle used the term, he said there is a first mover, sort of a higher power idea. The first mover from Aristotle's point of view is that this is an immortal being that never changes and keeps order and wholeness in the universe. So if there's a first mover, there have to be second movers, and those second movers then fit in that area of angels. And remember that it was in Greek where the term angel from angelos originated. So we have then the idea of messengers. Here's one that really tickled me. This was fun. I like stuff that's really juicy and interesting. In Zoroastrianism, that now we're up in the ancient Persia, which is now Iran. About 1,000 years BC, they have, that's as far back as they believe they can find their belief in something called the Fravashi. The Fravashi. And the Fravashi were beings of light that manifested the energy of the divine, and that every person has their own individual guardian angel. Sounding familiar? You see, just like this faith comes from a variety of threads of golden truths, as Holmes called them. Then we look at Judaism, and Judaism is that vision of angels from the Bible that I described, where they can be fierce and fiery, and they're there for you to protect you, but they might also wrestle with you, and they also are there to test you. And from Judaism, we move into Christianity. So just in the way that Buddhism comes from Hinduism, we can say Christianity comes from Judaism. So they adopted, nearly all Christian faiths have adopted that same view of angels from the Jewish story, from the Jewish beliefs. And then added to that, we have the angels in the gospel stories, specifically around the birth of Jesus. So Gabriel comes to Mary, Joseph has a dream, and in the dream, an angel tells him that Jesus is going to be the Son of God. And then there's that whole big emphasis on the nativity, where the shepherds of the field, the angels came to the shepherds of the field to announce the birth of this brand new child that brings hope to the world. And Islam has a very strong lean toward angels. They do not believe that angels have free will, but they believe that angels... Also, you hear this belief that they guard people, they test people, they record deeds, and they even have the ability to question the dead. So, and in the Muslim faith, they have a lot of rules and tenets and stuff they follow. And there are 6 articles of faith that they follow. And one of the articles of faith is that they have to accept the presence of angels. So it's very important in Islam faith. All right, so if you just kind of take a quick overview of all of that, what we see is that they have some things in common. They all look at, all of those that we've named, look at this idea of spiritual beings that have been created by something greater. They see angels as wise and intelligent. They see angels as very interested in human affairs. They consider angels as messengers. And the bottom line is, in all of them, they were not meant to be worshipped. Now, as I mentioned, Holmes didn't say a lot about what he believed, but I'm going to tell you this, and this is why Cheryl surprised me a little bit. When I looked in the glossary, because we have the best glossary in the back of that Science of Mind textbook, and man, the angel did not show up in that at all. So then I looked in our concordance. Now, our concordance is, it's okay. It's really useful for me, but it's not comprehensive. I like a good comprehensive concordance, and nobody has created that for us yet. I'm optimistic someone will. But in our concordance, he only lists 3 references to angels. And the saint was really cool. I didn't look up saints, so that was really fun. I liked hearing that, his take on saints. And in each of those 3 references, he only spoke of angels as in a scriptural context, so he's quoting something from the Bible, or he used it in a figurative way, and the example I was going to use was found in the reading that Cheryl did, where he said, if we seek the divine in humankind, we will find it, and we will be entertaining angels unaware. So it's a whole different way that he used it in our material that we study. He absolutely had a strong lean toward the, and I don't want to undermine this because this is key, the individual development of a personal relationship, a one-on-one relationship with the divine. So as we look at this way, we see that so many of us have this belief in angels as guidance from God, or saints as, you know, because isn't it funny, we have saints for everything, saints that protect us. Even if you've never been Catholic, people sometimes carry around the medals, or believe they know the name of the saint that will help you find your keys when you lose your keys, or that you want to sell your house. I can't tell you how many times people have come here to say, do you sell those little statues so that I can bury in my yard to sell my house? It's some saint. It's like, no, I don't really know much about it. But I know that, you know, lots of us do. And so what I want to say is that, you know, when we open ourselves to divine guidance, that guidance will be delivered to us in any way we are able to receive it. And we can't get it any other way. So it's a beautiful invitation for us to know that since the beginning of time, people have called on angels. And what I want to say is that for some people, the symbolic or metaphysical interpretation is plenty. It's enough, and it works. But for others of us, we really need to feel that brush of angel wings across our face sometimes. We need to have that evidence to feel that comfort of that guidance and that support, that greater support. So whatever you believe, what I know is that right where you are, God is, that all-powerful, that the fullness of what God is completely there. The glory of God, the power of God, the goodness of God, the beauty of God, it is never taken from us. We are always fully supported. And how we interpret personally spiritual matters will be what we need to have our own understanding of the universe. So whether it's angels or saints or close encounters with aliens, it doesn't matter. What works for you will be the prescription that you need, and nothing less will do the job. So I wanted to end this morning with a gorgeous quotation from a current minister, one of my favorite ministers in our movement, not Reverend Noli or Reverend Cheryl, but one of my favorite ministers in our movement is Reverend Jesse Jennings, and he has a church in Houston, Texas, and he is the guy that answers questions from the readers in the back of the Science of Mind magazine. And someone asked him about angels and saints. And his idea is that for some people, it's difficult for us to feel helped on the mortal plane. And when we just talk about, especially if you're new to this philosophy, the idea of universal mind or the absolute or the coldness of the way we talk about the law as being you know, it doesn't care whether, you know, it doesn't care. We choose. We are always planting the seeds into that of our future, into that creative medium by the way we choose it. And the law doesn't argue with us. It just responds to whatever we say. So for some people, that's not enough. And so they have personalized that idea of God or spiritual mind into angels and saints and lots of other things. And he shares that he was raised by a Dutch grandmother who believed in elves. And he said it was marvelous, that it served him in growing up. And now listen to his words about that. We each personalize God into helpful agencies. Doing so does not rewrite how the universe works. It doesn't change principle. It doesn't change the natural spiritual laws of the universe. But it does something beneficial because it gives us a feeling of being guided and guarded and befriended. These are wonderful feelings to have. So I invite you to dive deep, to experience the intimacy of that mystical moment of perfect connection with the oneness that God is. And I would like to put a blessing on all of this morning through the words of prayer. So if you would just get comfortable where you're seated, take a nice, deep, cleansing breath. And without searching, we allow that perfect gem of understanding that is just for us to fall into our lap. Thank you, God. And so I feel the presence of Spirit right here in this room. I sense that angelic activity of life itself. I recognize that power that is greater than I am. It is a power for good. And we are given this gift of using that power, of aligning ourselves to these deep and gorgeous truths. And so we open ourselves even now to be conduits of divine truth, revealers of God's love, those who stand anchored in spiritual truth at this time of holy newness, being born yet again onto this planet through the story of Christmas. I feel the love of God within me. It is pulsating in a gorgeous, easy rhythm. The activity of life within us that restores us to our wholeness again and again. It is that intelligence, that infinite wisdom that we are one with at all times and in all ways. And I feel that activity to know that it sparkens within each and every one of us, a remembrance of that intelligence, that wisdom, that healing truth, that we are refreshed and we are restored, that we are aware of greater and greater truths that have never before been revealed to us. And in this time where we are approaching the longest night, that gorgeous mystical solstice, we open ourselves to realize that it is in the dark that all seeds germinate, that sprouts begin to bud and roots dive deeply to anchor us in truth, and holy newness can be born yet again through each and every one of us. So I know wherever there is any appearance of limitation, of illness, or lack of funds in any way, damaged relationships, that right there in each and every situation is the fullness of truth, the wholeness of God, that which heals and reveals greater and greater light and therefore truth on this planet. So I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. For as we reflect on these truths, as we allow that stirring within us to blossom and open and flow from us, we become in the boldest way that divine, individualized expression of God as us. So I know there is healing on this planet. There is healing in every relationship. There is love flowing and moving because there is grace flowing and moving. Whether it's an angel gorgeous Bodhisattva. We just open ourselves and say, thank you, God. And in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I release the words of this prayer and I allow them to be. And together we say, and so it is.